It's December 6th, and this is the second edition of the Josh Holiday Show podcast, and you are hearing us first on talkradiox.com, and you may also be listening later, but it doesn't really matter as long as you're listening. A lot of stuff to talk about tonight, a whole list of things to talk about. Movies I saw this week, saw the September issue, saw Big Fan, saw an Education. I'm going to talk about some stuff that's happening in my personal life, talking about dogs, Humane Society, talking about the homeless, talking about how Nickelback sucks, talking about how Bono from U2 is a douche, talking about what else is on the show? We're talking about comedy plays that are playing in the city that you can check out that you should for cheap, and also all kinds of other stuff on the show today. Why bother laying it all out for you? Just jump in and see what happens. Last night, I tuned to my PVR to watch Saturday Night Live, which I set it to record all the time now, and I guess I just kind of watch it out of habit, because there's generally maybe one or two sketches that are funny, and the Weekend Update has been pretty solid as of late. So last night, I get home late, and I turn the PVR on, and the host of SNL is someone named Blake Lively, and I'm like, who the hell is Blake Lively? So she came out on stage, and I was like, oh, I don't know who she is, but she is definitely quite hot and attractive. I would like to make sweet love to her, but I still have no idea why she's on Saturday Night Live. And I thought, well, am I getting old? Am I an old guy? Then later in the show, I found out, oh, she's from Gossip Girl. And I realized, no, I'm not old. It's that I'm not female, and I'm not a gay man. So that's why I didn't know who she was. In the paper today, they list the Toronto's top stuff in terms of albums and movies that have been number 1 through 10. And music was really disappointing. Just the lack of taste shown by people in general here. Susan Boyle was number 1. You know, the sort of homely British woman with a great voice. Actually, I don't feel too bad that that's number 1. That's kind of nice. Lady Gaga, number 2. Andrea Bocelli, number 3. Rihanna, 4. Norah Jones, 5. Michael Bublé, 6. Adam Lambert, come on, number 7. That little kid, Justin Bieber, 8. John Mayer, 9. And the Glee music, number 10. It just seems boring. I don't know if it's just because that's popular music in general. And then here, in terms of movies, the number 1 movies, all pretty lame movies. Twilight, I guess, you know, the teenage girl audience went out for that one. 2012, a stinker of a movie by all accounts, number 2. So no matter, even if you make a crappy movie, people will go see it. Ninja Assassin, action film. The Blind Side, Sandra Bullock, not a fan. Old Dogs, which we've talked about on this podcast last week. Robin Williams vehicle. The theory being that Robin Williams, when he does comedy, not really good. When he does drama, generally good. People went to see that. That frightens me. Other ones rounding out the top 10. Disney's Christmas Carol. Planet 51, not supposed to be very good. Precious, which I really like to see. At number 8, is getting rave reviews. Fantastic Mr. Fox, also quite a good movie. And The Road rounding out the top 10. That's for Toronto. I imagine Canada-wide, it's probably similar. In the U.S., maybe slightly different. But I don't know. I'm in Toronto, and that's what's happening here. Now, we'll talk about movies I saw this week a little bit later on. What else can I tell you? Well, yesterday, this is... All right, I'll give you a little bit of background here. I am currently living in the third floor of my parents' house near Yonge and St. Clair. I came back to Toronto in the late spring from Calgary, and I rented out my place there. I owned a place there, and so now I'm here, and in the new year, I'm going to find a place downtown. But for the time being, I'm sharing a house with some elderly roommates, and I think my dad has turned into the cranky old man, the get-off-my-lawn guy. I never would have expected it to happen. He has his moments of where he's grumpy and rah, 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 rah. Temperamental, but this is bad. Friday night, I got home pretty late, and as I was going to bed around 2:30, I heard kids out on the street, and I guess there was a neighborhood party. So there's cars parked all over, which is a little backstory to what happened. But the next day, the neighbors across the street, someone had parked right in front of the driveway, like right across their driveway. And so they called the parking people because they had to go somewhere, and a tow truck, they had to sign and got the car towed, which is fine. I mean, it totally makes sense that you feel badly for someone getting their car towed, but a mistake was made. This is where it gets interesting. My dad is very grumpy about our driveway. And part of the problem is that where the curb kind of goes down to make that, so you don't have to drive up a curb to get in your driveway, it goes about 2 feet into the driveway, it goes back up to a normal curb. So sometimes people think that they can park, maybe two feet into our driveway. It's a fairly wide driveway, and it's the one issue that my dad gets rankled about, and he's actually made signs that say, "You are breaking a bylaw, blah, blah, blah," that he has printed out to put on people's windshields. So he's hardcore. So what happened that day, Saturday morning, when he saw that the truck was there, parked there, a little like maybe 2 feet into our driveway, if that, he put this sign on the windshield of the truck, which is fine. And the truck also got a ticket, as did every car in the neighborhood, just because they had overstayed their time limit. So he sees that the neighbors are having the car towed that's blocking their driveway, and the bright idea comes to his head that, oh, you know what? I'm going to get this guy towed. So I came downstairs, and he was almost boasting, like, guess what? I got a car towed. And I was like, why? Because I had seen the guy's car when I got home, and it wasn't badly over the driveway. And so my first thought was, well, you've kind of pissed someone off who knows exactly where you live, because he also left that note on the truck when it got towed. So I said, well, our cars are probably going to end up with some kind of vandalism, or something's going to happen in the near future. And I thought, I don't know. It struck me as a little bit of an overreaction. It wasn't like it's this guy parking all the time in front of the house. And it's going to cost the person close to $200, plus a trip down to the middle of nowhere to pick up their car, all because they parked a little over the driveway and it's close to Christmas. It's very Scrooge-like or Grinch-like. Pick your Christmas evil. So first of all, I guess the next day when his car was towed, the guy came to our door, and I just overheard him talking to my mom, and she was saying, well, I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. She didn't admit that my dad had actually gotten the car towed. And then the lady whose car got towed, I felt very badly for her. She made a mistake, but she had no idea that she had parked in front of the driveway, and she was just and she was just parked there to practice choir stuff with her friends. The guy, I didn't know where he went, but the woman, I gave her a drive halfway down to the parking place because it was on the way downtown. And the guy, who I haven't seen, but I'm almost tempted just because I feel bad, terrible. I mean, may try and get $100 to the other dude whose truck got towed from in front of our house because my dad's a jackass. So there you go. That's a personal tale of woe and my grumpy father. A lot of news this week in Toronto about the Toronto Humane Society. It was raided by the OSPCA. And there was an article, actually a series of articles in the Globe and Mail a couple of months ago chronicling problems at the Toronto Humane Society and how Tim Tro, who's the head of the society, was running things in an unusual manner. The main issue they had is that he had a no euthanasia policy at all. So he had this policy where, no, I will not euthanize an animal, which... and on the surface you think, yeah, that's good. He's not going to, no animals should die. But when you really think about it, there's a lot of animals who are suffering, you know, horrible illnesses or conditions that what kind of life are they getting? I've had to be there when we've put down family dogs before, and it's the most heartbreaking thing because you're sort of there and you want to comfort them, but they're picking up on your nervousness, and it's incredibly difficult for anyone to lose a pet. But that said, if said pet is in a great amount of pain and their life isn't really being lived to their fullest, then euthanasia is probably the best option. And so the OSPCA went in there with police, and they did a big raid and found, you know, some animals that were not well cared for, and animals in the ceiling, and there was quite a bit of controversy. But I wanted to mention this while we're on the topic of pets. I used to, when I was out in Calgary hosting a radio show, I had a weekly segment where I would bring on someone from the Calgary Humane Society and talk about pets that were up for adoption. They would bring one each week, and it was kind of slightly selfish because I love animals, and I didn't have a dog or any kind of pets out in Calgary. So once a week, I got some animal therapy by having a animal in the studio, and at the same time, getting out the cause that, you know, there are a lot of animals that are abandoned and need new homes or somehow don't have homes that need homes. And what I want to say is we're getting close to Christmas. It's, I don't know, what, 19 days away? Not a math genius, but 25 minus 6, 19. Yeah, 19 days away. And I just want to say, do not, whatever you do, do not get someone a pet as a gift. Particularly a dog. Because a lot of people think, oh, I'm cute, I'll get a puppy for Christmas, how great, won't it be a nice surprise? But oftentimes there's no thought put into it, and the fact that this is an animal that will need your care for the next 10 to 15 years. You're going to have to walk it every day, take it out. Yeah, you're not going to be able to leave your house for more than, you know, 8 hours at a time, because that dog will need your attention and needs to be cared for. It's like giving someone a baby for Christmas. It's like, hey, look what I got you. I got you a child. Yeah. Not a good thing to do at all. What I have suggested in the past is get a book on how to raise a dog or choosing a dog or something like that. And, you know, take some time and think about the decision, because it's not something you do on a whim at all. And I would also say, don't go to pet stores to buy dogs, because you're encouraging puppy mills, which the dogs are raised in horrible conditions, cages stacked upon cages, feces, and you've seen the raids every couple of months on television. You'll see another puppy mill being raided. It's really a disgusting and inhumane way of raising animals, and by buying at a pet store, you're basically encouraging the process to continue. If there's a demand, then the supply will continue. If you're looking for a pet, maybe check out some shelters online. If you go to petfinder.org, if not .com, but PetFinder is a great site to search for animals that need a home in your area, and you can search by size, breed, sex, that type of thing. You can also check with the Humane Society. I know lately in Toronto they've been given a bad rap, but there are still animals that will need to be adopted. And yeah, I would just caution against buying at a pet store, and on a whim is terrible. You can also seek out breeders, responsible breeders. I saw an ad for a breeder in one of the newspapers saying, just in time for Christmas. And I thought, you're a breeder and you're promoting animals as a Christmas gift? Not a responsible breeder. I was also at a pet store. This gives you the idea of the mentality of people who buy dogs at the pet store. I was at a pet store a few years ago, excuse me, and there was a couple there, young couple, maybe douchey a little bit. You know, wearing the fashion coats and that type of thing. And there's a special area where people can kind of play around with a pet that they think they might want to get. And they were playing with a pet, and I overheard them And the girl said, "Is this the kind of dog that needs to be walked?" I was astounded. I thought, even asking that question, obviously these people know nothing about dogs. Every dog needs to be walked. Every dog needs to go out, preferably a couple of times a day, and you know, given exercise. As Caesar would say, exercise, discipline, affection. And yet, I don't think that the people at the pet store would say, "Oh, you know what? You're not the right people to have a dog." Whereas a breeder might say, "Yeah, I don't think you're ready for a dog. It's just a bad idea buying at a pet store, and a really, really bad idea to get someone a dog or other pets for Christmas, but particularly dogs that need you know, round the clock attention." So that's my rant on that. Well, I've got the Flemmies. I hope you don't mind. Let's talk a bit about the homeless. You see homeless guys with dogs, and Norm Macdonald does a great bit about it, but it makes a lot of sense. You're a homeless guy, and you have a dog. The dog is probably like, "Oh, come on, you know, I can do better without you. You're cramping my style." Even in Calgary and here, come up with nicknames for homeless people you see all the time. What I would like to say, and maybe on the surface it sounds cruel, do not give money to panhandlers. No matter how decrepit they looked or how friendly or charming they are, do not give money to panhandlers. 90% of the time, maybe even more. I'm not a statistics guy, but I can assure you that in many, 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 many cases, it's not people who are homeless and really need food and shelter. It's people who are addicted to a substance and need money to feed that addiction. And in other cases, it's people with mental illness who the money will allow them to go longer without getting professional help. The more you give panhandlers or homeless people money, the more you're encouraging them to beg for money and to not seek any kind of other help or work or anything of that nature. It's just you see it all the time. I think it's partly because you're like, "Oh, I feel kind of guilty. Here's this guy sitting out in the cold out front of the store." But you're better off, if you want to give money to the cause, seek out shelters, you know, your covenant houses or other agencies that help the homeless and the mentally ill, and send your money there. The people will get the help, and the less people that are getting money on the streets, the more likely they are to seek out shelter or help at one of these agencies. So don't give to the homeless. And I'm going to tell you homeless pet peeves. If you're a pan, well, I won't say homeless. I'll say panhandlers, because some of these people are living, they have living facilities, but they're feeding a drug addiction. If your clothes that you're wearing are two or three times more expensive than the clothes I'm wearing, then your case isn't being made in a very strong way. Maybe trying to do something, you know, play an instrument, even if you play it poorly. And if you have tons of tattoos or piercings, it just sort of shows me that, okay, so you're going to spend your money on tattoos or piercings instead of food and shelter. So that's all I'm going to say about the homeless. Give to the shelters. Don't give to the panhandlers. That's the main message there. All right, let's move out of the social issues and into more pressing issues. Nickelback. I've said this time and time again before, and there's plenty of arguments. You go on message boards or Facebook, and I'm just going to say it. Nickelback sucks. They are not a good band. That is not good music. The station I worked for in Calgary had a no Nickelback guarantee, which that's fantastic. That was one of the reasons I was excited to be working there. Because the station I was at before, they did play Nickelback. And excuse me, every time I would play a Nickelback song, I was like, "Oh, God." And would make little subtle jokes like, why do they call Nickelback Nickelback? Because they used to sell their CDs for a nickel, and people would always ask for their nickel back. The Nickelback lyrics are written in the voice of a 14-year-old boy, if that. It's like the most banal teenage dumb guy lyrics in the world. And musically, it's just bland. Chad Kroeger doesn't have a particularly colorful or good voice. And he's also has a drunk driving conviction, which, you know, just for that little extra douche hilarity. But what people will often say, and this is an argument that I really, really hate for any kind of media, but you go on these message boards, and a lot of times, I go on a lot of the radio boards, and a lot of times it's people who are in the radio business or whatever who see Nickelback as their CanCon bread and butter. They'll say, "Well, look at how many albums they've sold. They're one of the most popular bands in the world. Look how many." And that is a terrible argument, and it's made all the time. Popularity does not equal good. Britney Spears' album was number one. Miley Cyrus' album. Are those albums good because they're popular? Old Dogs. A lot of people went to see it. Is it a good movie? No, it's not. But it's popular. Popularity does not equal good. Nickelback is not a good band. The masses are asses. There's a lot of dumb people out there. And you look at the actual quality musical artists and quality movies and quality television shows, and a lot of times they do struggle to find an audience because there's a smaller percentage of people who value intelligent music, movies, television, that type of thing. And I just as a treat, I have a clip from a caller who I had this debate with, and here is what the typical Nickelback fan sounds like.
They're a great Canadian band. There's so many American bands, European bands, you play them on your stations all the time.
Oh, Nickelback is not great. They write lyrics. These are like 30, 35-year-old guys writing.
My age, and they're mature, and they're sophisticated, and they've had a run around life where you're still wet behind the ears. You don't know what's going on. They've done it all. You're trying to follow in their footsteps, and you don't like them? I don't get it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with Nickelback. Absolutely nothing wrong. I don't understand the sentiment there at the station.
It's just they get played on every other station. Their music is sort of banal, and it all sounds the same. It's a 30, 35-year-old guy singing lyrics of a 14-year-old high school boy.
You know, not all of us were raised by our grandmothers, lived at home, and we're still living at home. We're 30 years old. You know, some people moved out early. They had a rough life. Nickelback's one of those people. My only point is that I think there's nothing wrong with Nickelback, but if you're going to play Ramones, like, you might as well play Nickelback. Listening to a Nickelback song, you got a bass track that's very peppy, and, you know, the lyrics are rhythmic. And then you got a band like the Ramones come on, and their guitars all sound the same. Every chord they play sounds exactly the same. And I'm trying to understand, like, how is that creative? How is that, you know, motivational for other musicians to, like, follow in their footsteps?
Nickelback. Ah, yes. There's your Nickelback mentality. While we're on the topic of music, let's talk about U2. They've been on tour a lot lately, so obviously getting quite a bit of press, and I see people's Facebook updates. Oh, going to U2, blah, blah, blah. Look what Bono said. And I know some people who have an almost fanatical, almost idolize Bono. They want to be Bono-like in their life. They think he's this great guy. But when it comes down to it, in terms of music, I don't think U2's done anything relevant musically for at least 15 years, since the mid to early 90s. And Bono prides himself, or maybe not prides himself, but portrays himself as this holier-than-thou guy. You know, why aren't the governments forgiving a debt of poor nations? Why can't we do more to help? He portrays himself as this sort of Mother Teresa-type guy. And here's where the hypocrisy comes in. First of all, U2, a big part of the Red campaign, which was an AIDS campaign. And the problem with that, and don't know necessarily if Bono's at fault for it, but I don't think he put any of his own money into the Red program. But they spent more money, like over $100 million promoting the Red campaign, and I think it only made somewhere around like $18 million. It was a colossal failure, and much, much more money was spent promoting it than actually was returned. But here's where Bono personally is a giant hypocrite. A few years ago, U2 and its leader, Bono, decided that they would take their corporation, U2, and move their home office out of Ireland to somewhere where there's very, very little taxes. So basically moved to a small Caribbean island or whatever to avoid paying taxes to the Irish government on their earnings. And this isn't a guy who, I'm only making enough to scrape by my family. If we get overtaxed, my family's not going to be able to eat. This is a band that makes millions and millions and millions and millions and maybe billions by the time you get down to it, of dollars. So it's not like paying a heavy burden of tax is gonna make them have to live life in a more difficult way. They have enough. How much money is enough money, or how much money is too much money? And the hypocritical thing is, governments collect taxes, and those taxes are often used for social issues like poverty or debt or forgiving debt of other nations. So here's Bono saying, oh, these governments should forgive this, and we should give more money to the poor. We should fight this, fight that. Yet he's not a man of his word, because he's taking U2's taxes out of Ireland. So Ireland is not getting taxes from U2, probably one of their biggest companies. One of the most profitable industries in Ireland is probably U2. And yet they've decided, oh, we're going to take our money overseas so we won't get taxed for it. So in the end, Bono is a giant hypocrite. And Bono, you are a douche. One of my favorite words, as you've probably discovered. If you know me, you know all that already. So there you go. Bono, douche. By the way, if you, right now, I'm not up to speed where I'm doing this totally live with phone calls and that type of thing, but we will in the future. But if you do have issues and you want to debate any of the stuff that I've said here, because I often like a healthy debate or a discussion, go to the website, joshholidayshow.com, and I'm more than willing to chat about this stuff. You can leave it in the comments, or there's a contact form there. You can get in touch, because I welcome a healthy debate. And that's what makes life interesting. Movies. This past week, I went to see three different movies. I saw An Education, a British film written by Nick Hornby. September Issue, which is a documentary about the September issue of Vogue. And saw a movie called Big Fan with Patton Oswalt's leading man debut. First, we'll talk about An Education. I went in with decent expectations, because I had seen that it had been reviewed quite well on Rotten Tomatoes. My mother said she saw it and liked it, and I was like, okay, I'll go see it. I like British films. It's kind of a Lolita-like tale. It takes place in the 60s in Britain, and Peter Sarsgaard plays this older guy to a teenage girl at a boarding school, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but I'll just say that the characters are great. The writing is great. Nick Hornby helped write it. And the girl who plays the young girl, or the woman who plays the young girl, however you want to put it, is played by someone called Carey Mulligan. And she's really, really fantastic. She's going to get a lot of notice from this particular role. I looked at on IMDb, and she has done other stuff before, here and there, a lot of it British. But this is a role that I think will be a breakthrough for her, and I expect to see big things. And a friend of ours, this guy Sean, if you're listening, you know who you are. We tried to talk to him about it. We were like, why don't you see? You should see it. It's a really, really good movie. It's really entertaining. And he's like, oh, it's a girl movie. I can't see it. Oh, a girl movie. But I would recommend it highly. Alfred Molina as the girl's father is a really funny secondary role, as is the girlfriend of Peter Sarsgaard's friend. So great supporting roles, and lots of twists and turns, and definitely some. It's a thinking movie too, but it rolls along. It's not like a pompous kind of like, oh, herefore are we in Britain? No, what? It's just a really interesting a fun movie. Well, I say fun. Fun seems so light. Entertaining. That's what it is. September issue. Saw that on the same day in the theater next door. Take from that what you will. This is a documentary that I'd actually been meaning to see for a while. I don't know. I'm a bit of a pussy that way. My guilty pleasure TV show is America's Next Top Model. And I know I'm going to take a lot of heat for it, but my justification is, you know, hot model chicks prancing around and being catty. That's sort of fun. Anyway, I thought this was an interesting movie. I know someone who is a model who happens to be in some of it. It chronicles the putting together of the September 07 issue of Vogue magazine. And, of course, the main protagonist is Anna Wintour, who has been the editor of Vogue for, I think, 20 years or so. And there's been fictional characters based on her. The Devil Wears Prada was based on her, and to some degree Ugly Betty. But definitely a character known to some as sort of the Ice Queen in a very, very cold, impersonal type of character. And it is interesting to sort of get inside Anna Wintour's head and to sort of see little flashes of humanness every now and again. And there's some conflict in the movie, which makes, you know, documentaries interesting if there's some kind of something to grip you. But I just didn't find enough of a wow factor. I didn't leave the theater thinking, wow, that was interesting. That was amazing. It was one of those programs that if it was on A&E or Documentary Channel or something, I'd be like, yeah, let's watch this. But as a theater movie, it didn't really blow me away. I mean, I learned something. It was interesting, but I left thinking, give or take it. Big fan. I'm a big fan of Big Fan. Saw that this week as well. And we talked about this last week on the podcast. Patton Oswalt is one of my favorite all-time comedians. Just a really genuinely, naturally funny guy. And definitely in my top, at the very least, top five, maybe top three. But I wanted, the movie opened on Friday of last week, and I wanted to see it this week, and I did. That's how committed to you, the listener, I am. I went and saw this damn movie. If you're not familiar with Patton Oswalt, he is probably best known to the general public now for being the voice, of Ratatouille. But he's also been on King of Queens. He had a recurring role there. And he's the kind of guy who pops up in all kinds of movies, and usually he has a really funny scene. He's sort of a character actor guy, and I think he enjoys doing that. But in this case, the movie is called Big Fan, and it is written by the same guy who wrote The Wrestler, although in this case he actually directed it as well. So written and directed by the dude who did who wrote The Wrestler, and it has that same sort of feel, kind of not too glossy, kind of low-key, you know, down on your luck kind of feel to it. And chronicles a guy who is a huge New York Giants fan, a fan of the football club, and a hardcore fan, and basically that's his life. He works as a parking booth guy. And other than that, he sort of has his own little starring role as a caller on the local talk radio show. And then his life changes in a pretty dramatic way after an encounter with the star player of the Giants. And I don't want to give too much of a twist away, but basically he's faced with a major decision, and it's, you're frustrated watching him, and you know it's the kind of guy you want to give a shake and say, oh, what are you doing? But it's a good movie, and it's an interesting struggle emotionally, and it's great to see Patton Oswalt in this type of role, because he's a comedian, and it's a pretty serious role. There's some character-y comedy stuff to it, but he did a really, really good job, and the supporting characters are pretty solid as well. And it's a movie I can recommend. Big fan. Go and check it out. And some of the scenes with Patton Oswalt and his mother are pretty funny. And it actually reminded me of a Patton Oswalt bit where he talks about the couple in the Stella D'Or breakfast bar commercials. So I thought I'd play that for you because it's similar. It reminded me of some of the discussions with his mom in Big Fan. So this is Patton Oswalt.
I'm terrified of getting married. I am. I don't know why, man. Why am I so scared of being married?
For good reason.
No, I mean, I really thought about it, and I actually found the reason. Stella D'Oro breakfast treats. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? In the late 70s, The Stella D'Oro company put out a product called breakfast treats. And they're like biscotti if you live in a trailer park. Like, they're these horrible, long, crumbly-ass cookies. And they put a commercial on the air in the late 70s that is the most disturbing, horrifying fucking thing I've ever seen on TV. And the commercial opens in, like, 3 o'clock in the morning in this dank David Fincher-esque kitchen. And there's just this 50-year-old, just this woman, just this unfuckable hag in a house dress, sitting at a table, gnawing on one of these breakfast treats. Then her husband comes trudging in, and he's got the bad comb over and the shitty robe, and he comes in and he goes, "What are you doing?" That's the first line of dialogue in this cookie commercial. "What are you doing?" So then she says, "I'm having a Stella D'Oro breakfast treat." And he goes, "Stella D'Oro breakfast treat? What's that?" And she goes, "Dear, you sweet, crumbly little cookie, you can have them any time." And he says, "If you can have them any time, why did he call them breakfast treats?" So then she says, "George, don't talk. Eat. Stella D'Oro breakfast treats." What women, what fucking ad company, what market research did they do? We've done a lot of research, and these cookies appeal to people in their mid-50s, trapped in failed, hateful marriages, and as they spiral deeper into the separating asshole of mutual acrimony and defeat, they need to gnaw on our sweet, crumbly cookies. If that ad had been 4 seconds longer, it would have been, "You know, maybe if you learned how to fuck me, I wouldn't be down here gnawing on this thing like it was the paper boy's dick. You fucking whore!" Stella D'Oro breakfast treats. Snack time anytime. "You know, maybe if you learned to eat some pussy, I wouldn't be down here trying to get a sugar high off this fucking thing. Your twat smells like a baby's coffin, you fucking asshole!" Stella D'Oro breakfast treat. Snack time anytime.
That is Patton Oswalt, and do yourself a favor, if you're not really familiar with his comedy, check out one of his albums, Feeling Kind of Patton, the first one, Werewolves and Lollipops, the second, and I keep forgetting the third one, the most recent one, even though I was in the audience when he taped it at the Lisner Auditorium in Washington, D.C. Really, really genuinely funny guy, and talented, too. If this one deals with the Toronto area. So maybe it'll still be interesting if you're not in Toronto or in the Southern Ontario area. But there's a couple of plays that are playing in the city right now that are really, really worth checking out. Toxic Avenger is one of them. Toxic Avenger the musical. And My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding. First of all, let's talk about Toxic Avenger. It's based on the Troma movie of the same name, and I played off-Broadway and was a huge hit in New York City, and they opened it here on Halloween of this year. And I saw a performance the week leading up to Halloween, sort of a preview show, and I really liked it. I mean, I went in and I enjoyed it. Most of the people I've talked to, friends of mine who have a similar sort of sense of humor and comedy, enjoyed it. But I've also ran into people who are more serious theater people, more traditionalists. And they're like, "Eh, I don't know, I didn't really like it, didn't have a great plot, blah, blah, blah." But I would say if you're looking for an entertaining time at the theater, it's a lot of fun. Small cast. Like, let me count. One, two, three, four, five actors in the show. A couple of them playing, you know, multiple characters, and it's a lot of fun sort of seeing them change from character to character, and some of the over the top stuff. The set is fun, the music is good, and it's just a really, really good time at the theater. And it looks like they're having a hard time selling tickets, and I can't figure out why. I don't know if it's because it's on the Danforth and not in the traditional theater area, but whatever the case is, apparently I mean I haven't heard any news to that effect, but I got an email from you know, I'm on a Ticketmaster list saying, hey, free tickets to this show. So I got some free tickets to it, and they're now offering 2-for-1 tickets and all kinds of ticket discounts. So let me give you, Now Magazine this week, there was an ad saying 2-for-1 tickets if you use this code. So let me give you that code now. It's F as in Fred or Frank or Ferdinand. FERD241. And if you happen to be listening to this or you don't have a pen or something, pick up a copy of Now Magazine, and the ad is in there somewhere. I think it's in the theater section. And it's a worthwhile show. It's a lot of fun, and I can recommend it. And if you see it and you don't like it, you know, you can yell at me, or if you're within physical proximity, you can punch me in the balls. Not the balls. You can punch me in the arm. You can punch me in the balls if I do something even worse. But arm. Let's just make that clear. You can only punch me in the arm. Okay, that's settled. My mother's lesbian Jewish Wiccan wedding. I'll throw my bias out first off. I'm friends with the two people who wrote it and the two main characters. How did that come to be? Well, one of the girls... Okay, how do I explain this? Well, I'll give you the basic premise. David and Irene got married. David's mother, in her 40s or 50s, after you know, leaving her husband or whatever, came out of the closet as a lesbian, and she got together with a woman who was a Wiccan, so a witch, or you know, more spiritual. A witch sounds like she doesn't ride a broom. So in any case, Irene is an actress as well, and I've worked with her tons of times on different corporate events, murder mysteries, that type of thing. And through her, we've met her husband, David, who's a singer-songwriter. And so they put together this play for the Fringe Festival, and we didn't really think much of it because a lot of different friends of ours, and I've done Fringe shows, and it was just kind of a fun thing at the Fringe, and you go check out Fringe shows. And I thought, oh, this is just Irene. You know, she's just one of us. So we even did a few of us, my friend Gene and Brian and I, we performed improv as part of a fundraiser for the Fringe show. And we were in the program of the Fringe show, so we were early adapters. And a couple of us went to opening night opening night of their show at the Fringe. It was at the Bread and Circus in Kensington Market. So not a huge venue by any means, maybe 75 seats. And we were blown away. At the end of the show, I was like, oh my God, that was really, really, really good. And thankfully, it was opening night, so I think this happened to pretty much anyone who saw the show became a champion of it, and the word of mouth spread really, really quickly. So I think the remaining performances all ended up selling out and having a lot of people show up and not be able to get tickets. And some of the people who were in the show, went to go see the show, were from Mervish Productions, one of the big, probably the biggest theatrical producer in Toronto. They, too, enjoyed the show, and they decided that they would take on a production of the show and mount it, and that's happening now, as it has been for a month and a half now. It is playing at the Panasonic Theater, which is great. It's fantastic for Irene and David, and they're very excited, and it's a really, really fantastic play. I think, you know, David sort of, he plays himself and he really anchors the show. And all of the performances are top notch, and it's a really, really fun show. They sort of take pokes at Alberta and sort of the attitude towards different lifestyles there, which is kind of funny because I had just come from that environment. And I wish them much success. It's playing now until January 3rd. I have a sneaking suspicion it might get extended because it's doing well with ticket sales. But I will tell you this. If you want to go and see it, but if you're on a bit of a budget, Tuesday nights, all the tickets are half price. So that might be a day to go and see the show if you're a little tight for cash. It's at the Panasonic Theater, and you can go to Mervish.com and get yourself some tickets. It's a really, really great show, well worth checking out. My mother's lesbian Jewish Wiccan wedding. All right, Leafs. Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know what you say. They had a great stretch there for a little while. They're doing well, and then last night in Boston, they tanked. But at the same time, to put them, they had some old bad habits. And they didn't have a great game, but Boston had just been blown out in a similar way the night before in Montreal. So you knew they were going to be playing hard, and the Leafs aren't going to win every game. You know, they could have lost 3-2, but they lost by larger margins. So the real test will come on come tomorrow night, Monday night, when they have, I think it's the Thrashers in town, and whether they bounce back from the loss. Because if it's another bad loss, then, you know, I don't know what to say. So that's where the actual team is at. They made a small trade this week. Jiří Tlusty, they sent to the Carolina Hurricanes. He had been up a few times to play for the big team, but most of the time he spent with the Marlies of the American Hockey League, and a pretty skilled guy. And they were expecting a lot from him in terms of being a points producer, but he was given quite a few sort of chances to shine. He's doing quite well in the AHL, but I don't think he really at this point fit into the long term plans of Brian Burke, particularly with some of the other talent he started to bring into the organization, you know, via the draft, and also via college recruits, your Bozaks, your Hansons. He's brought in Strahlberg. So it's I think he was sort of expendable, and instead of getting nothing for him, he got a first round pick. Not a pick, but someone who had already been picked in the first round in this past year's draft. 27th overall, a gentleman by the name of Philippe Paradis. He was chosen 27th overall by Carolina in the last year's draft. So he's still a young kid, about 18 years old. And he's been pegged as a power forward, which, going back to last week, it was something I said the Leafs need in a major way. Although I don't think he'll be NHL ready for at least another year or two. Probably he'll play next year in the A, and then maybe he'll try and crack the Leafs. But they're pegging him as not a star power forward, not like a first line or two power forward, but maybe a third line center or winger. And he's a gritty guy, finishes his checks, a bit of an agitator, and a guy who works his butt off every single shift. So the kind of guy made in the Brian Burke mold. And I'm looking forward to seeing him play. But that's the kind of player I like watching too. It's more exciting to see someone, you know, who doesn't mind driving the net, who will finish his checks and play hard every game. And a lot of times that kind of on ice attitude is contagious. You see one guy like working his ass off and hitting and you know, maybe fighting once in a while, and the whole team kind of gets that energy. And if you have a lot of energy players, your team is up and energetic and generally will win some games. If your goaltending is good, ask Philly about that. Other news regarding the Leafs, sort of. Maple Leaf Gardens, finally, after being vacant pretty much for last, I don't know, God, how many years since they moved from the Gardens to Air Canada Center. It's been used for filming. Death the Smoochie recently was on Battle of the Blades. They had the contest there. But for a long time, the building's been just sort of vacant, and there's been sort of fights over what's to be done with this particular building. And Loblaws for a long time has been sort of in the mix of what to do with the facility. And this past week they stepped up and announced their plans. And one thing they're doing is they will have an ice surface there. Though I'm kind of disappointed. I was kind of hoping they would keep the original ice surface and maybe the lower bowl and kind of build stuff around that on the outside, on the sides of the rink, and maybe bring in like a junior team or some kind of hockey team, maybe in the Ryerson team. But at the very least, it's one of the most famous buildings in Toronto, and it's going to get used, which is great. So the plan is to put in a Loblaws and some other retail on the main floor. There's going to be parking underground, and there will be a rink and some seating, which is nice because it still has a bit of that spirit. And there's also going to be another athletic facility, and it's great because Ryerson, one of my alma mater, is right in that neighborhood. It's basically on the campus, and they'll be able to take advantage of the repurposed Maple Leaf Gardens. So, not bad news all around. It's not going to be empty. Another NHL thing that I heard about was there's some talk about renaming some of the NHL trophies, like your Lady Byng, the Masters, and the Norris. They're basically player awards at the end of the years, trying to give them more contemporary, more relevant names, like, you know, naming them after recently retired players, your Lemieux, your Gretzky's. And I just think that's why, you know, you have such a great and proud history, and it's kind of quirky and interesting. Why would you go and change that? I don't understand. An award is an award. You don't midway through change the name of the award. That's just me. All right. Another thing that happened this week this is something I don't know why, if I'm just like an overly sensitive guy, but a lot of times I'll be walking in the street, especially if it's a nine or whatever, and you're walking behind a girl, and I'm a fast walker, so a lot of times I'm like catching up to people, and I always think, oh, this girl's going to think I'm like a creepo, or I'm going to attack her or something. And I don't know where that's founded, but I think conversely, I think a lot of girls think that when there's, you know, they're lonely and there's guys kind of walking behind them, they, you know, they get creeped out, and maybe slightly justified. You can't be over, can't be too cautious. So this week I was walking behind a girl, and I was coming right up to a corner where I was turning left, and I almost kind of caught up to her, and then she turned around quickly and was like, ah. I'm like, hey. It was just that moment of like, I think she was like, you know, thinking I was about to attack her. But it's, I don't know, you know, what do you do? Sometimes I've even crossed to the other side of the street so as to not appear like any kind of threat. But anyway, I was at a Just for Laughs gala with Sarah Silverman recently, and they had a comic on named John Mulhaney, who writes for Saturday Night Live, and he's a kind of short, kind of skinny guy, really guy who you would see and you would think, no, this guy's never not a threat at all. Like, he's got a very baby face, and conversely, I'm a 6'3", 230-pound guy, like a big guy, so maybe there's some intimidation there. And in any case, I thought I'd play the comedy clip where he talks about a similar situation.
I've lived in New York City now for a few years, and I have a new phenomenon in my life where late at night on the street, women will see me as a threat. That is funny, yeah. That is silly. It's weird, too, because, like, I'm still afraid of being kidnapped. But I'll give you the best example of this. A couple of months ago, I was at a subway station at 2 o'clock in the morning, all right? And I'm changing between trains, 2 o'clock in the morning, and at this subway station, you have to, like, walk down this long hallway in order to change trains. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning, it's just me and this woman, and we're walking down the hallway. She's walking a few yards ahead of me, but she keeps giving me, like, the over-the-shoulder, like that, you know? And then she starts to pick up the pace, like she starts to walk a lot faster. So I think, oh, she must hear the train coming. Or maybe she feels it in her feet, like a Native American in a movie. So I start to sprint down the hallway at her, and she looks back and she's like, ah! And then she gives chase, so now we're booking it down the corridor at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm gaining on her. I'm gaining on her, and we're getting to the end of the hallway, and she starts to go into that, like, dead end shuffle, you know, that women do when you chase them. And I'm almost there. I'm almost at her, and then it dawns on me. Oh, she's running from me. Because in her eyes, I'm an adult. And adults rape each other. Kind of a lot. So I wanted to go up to her and be like, hey, no, nah, I'm not a man. I'm just some stupid punk, you know? But I think that that would be equally creepy. Okay, is if you were in a subway station at 2 o'clock in the morning and I chased you down, grabbed you and said, I'm not gonna rape you. I'm a little boy.
That is John Mulhaney. And that is it for this big rock and roll extravaganza for this week. What can I say? If you want to get in touch, go to joshholidayshow.com, and you can also leave your comments there as well. And if you're interested in being interviewed or you have ideas for the show, I'm open to anything at all. Have yourself a great week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.